It's done. Let go of it so we can bring this to market, please.
Yeah, we're definitely perfectionists.
Yeah.
For me especially, because at the end of the day, this isn't a soccer ball or like something that is casual. It's, I don't know, things that go onto people's rifles where they're protecting their lives and the lives of their friends or their family. Like, it's a pretty important big deal. I mean, one example. Text too.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, because that's grown quite a bit.
Yeah.
And, you know, Chris is the man. He called me and gave me shit because it was cold in Texas.
Yeah.
Yeah, because where are you guys out of again?
We're in Nashua, New Hampshire.
Yeah. Okay. Nice. So,
nice and up north.
Yeah.
Yeah, Canada, basically.
I'm from Buffalo, New York, originally. Okay. So,
that's so you get real snow.
Yeah, that's also Canada.
Yeah. Yeah, you get real snow. You get, like, feet and feet
I'm
of
jealous
snow.
Of that snow. Yeah, I want that.
They got, in some parts last week when that cold front moved through, like, 4 to 5 feet in some places within a couple days. So, yeah. They got a lot of snow.
Yeah, I keep seeing that because it's what, Buffalo Bills or something. People are always shoveling out the stadium.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm like, I want that snow. Give that to us.
And we lost last night, speaking of football. So we are now out of the playoffs.
Stinks.
Yeah.
Not a big football guy.
No. Nope.
Hockey, yeah. But not football.
I miss hockey. Like, the Sabres aren't really on a whole lot.
No.
And like, Houston, we catch a game every now and then. My wife and I actually drove up to Dallas and watched the Stars and the Sabres play a couple of years ago. So,
nice.
Yeah, we need to do that again. It was a good weekend.
That's fun. Yeah, right before coming here, my fiance and I went and we watched the Bruins versus the Habs.
Nice.
Which was a fun game. That was really cool. And then hotel and then flight the next morning. So.
Yeah, you guys had awesome seats, too.
Yeah.
No, right on the glass.
It was like a Christmas engagement gift, so it's pretty nice.
Nice.
You're like right behind the bench of the Canadians.
Oh, so, wow. Yeah, cool. Nice.
Very cool.
I always liked watching the Stanley Cup, like the playoffs and stuff, and the finals, because that's like, it's so intense. Like, everyone, you know, they want it, and they're like, it seems like it's more intense than like regular season games.
Oh, absolutely. Everyone takes it up to another level. I mean, there was one guy, I'm pretty sure, who died on the ice, and then they resuscitated him, and he asked how much time was left in the game to go back, and they're like, you're not playing.
You're done.
Yeah, there were guys, I think one of the Bruins players had his leg broken off of a shot or something like that, and he stayed on the ice the whole time fighting through it. Like, playoff hockey, it's a different level.
It's a it's a pretty gangster sport.
Yeah, just in general. Like,
yeah.
Yeah,
there is some guy.
If somebody wrongs one of your players, you can just beat the brakes off of them, and then you go sit in the box for 2 minutes.
Yeah,
and then you can continue to play, and they actually fight.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
real fighting.
Oh yeah, well it's different too because
like baseball when they're trying to slap each other with the gloves.
Yeah, the setups of the fights though too. Like, you're not using any of your lower body. It's just like you're holding the person, and you're smashing their face until one of them goes down and the refs get it.
Or you do the old jersey.
Yeah,
grab the jersey and punch them.
100%. Yeah, you're using that to get extra momentum. I mean, like if you look back in the history of NHL, there are guys who were just meant to go and protect people.
Oh
like,
yeah,
Wayne Gretzky,
Rob Ray.
Had a guy who would literally just go make sure that he was safe all the time. And all he did was train to fight and basically protect Gretzky. And whenever Gretzky left a different team, he'd take him with him. And that was always part of his contract.
Yeah, that was the first trade deal where an enforcer got partnered with a forward.
Yeah.
And I guess that is like common practice now where guys will do that. They'll have a goon that follows them around to beat people up.
I'm guessing y'all watch that Netflix enforcer.
Yeah, I watched that.
That was awesome.
Super good.
Yeah, check that out.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. I mean, back then, man, it's just wild shit that they're allowed to do on the ice. So, I mean, I ebbed and flowed with my like viewership of hockey. I enjoyed it when I was a kid, and then I don't know if you guys remember, like Fox started putting this little like streamer tail behind the puck,
the blue puck. Yeah,
yeah, because everybody like couldn't keep up with the game. And then that sucked because you're just distracted by that the whole time. So I stopped watching it, and then they brought it back. They got rid of it, and then they wanted to like no fighting in hockey for like a season.
Yeah.
And that was even worse.
And I was like, this is boring.
Yeah, well, that's like half the reason why you watch it is because it's such a brutal sport.
Yeah.
You go to the fight and hope to see a hockey game.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's so true. Yeah, it's a fun sport. I mean, I played... still play today, and it's cool to see the different levels and see, because once I played junior hockey, we were on a junior prep team, so we didn't have fighting in our league, but we had guys that came from leagues that there was fighting beforehand. And so every time we'd be like in a game and they're like, I'm going to drop gloves. And we're like, you're going to get kicked off the team.
Yeah.
Like, don't do that. And they're like, I miss that other league. And I'm like, I kind of understand it. And it shows highlight reels and it's just fist fights.
Yeah.
Like there's no hockey being played. It's just a fight.
Well, in that Enforcer documentary that you're talking about, did you watch it?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah. They were talking about how the European leagues that they don't allow fighting, mm-hmm. the injuries are way higher. And because there's no holding people back from hitting people.
Yeah, people just get smoke coming from across the ice.
Yeah, and but when there's in the back of your head, you're like, a giant might come off off the bench and beat me up. They're going to hold back a
some dude that's 6'7" on skates. That's a monster.
Yeah,
and it makes a difference too because it allows the really creative and talented and like skilled players to go do their game. It allows because everyone knows, if you hurt that talent, I'm gonna kill you.
Yeah.
And so like you're like, okay, I'm gonna make sure it's a legal hit. I'm not gonna be chippy with them because otherwise I'm gonna end up with my face caved in.
Yeah.
So like it allows those really high skill set players to go and be creative and show you what the game can be. And then you also get the entertainment factor of guys just beating the shit out of each other.
Yeah.
In a sports game. No other sports like do you have that. Like UFC is a fight, but otherwise
yeah, there's no sport that's not fighting that allows that.
The only thing, I don't know if you guys have it in your area, but Buffalo has an indoor like box lacrosse.
Oh,
and
okay.
It's very similar to hockey.
Yep.
Like 100% fights.
Box lacrosse.
Yeah, it's like indoor, and I think it's National Lacrosse League.
Hmm.
And those, it's super, they play on like the Sabres arena.
That's cool.
And it's very similar to hockey. Like,
is it just a Buffalo thing?
No, they're all over the country.
Hmm. Yeah, I've seen it before because they play inside of hockey rinks, so you can have full contact.
Yep.
But I'm a goalie in hockey, so like I noticed that they actually had goalie equipment because I played goalie in lacrosse too, and that sucked.
Yeah,
because like you have no padding, so like my shins were just completely purple for like a whole season from just getting smashed with lacrosse balls. And so I saw that and I was like, I can actually have like the padding to play like a hockey goalie. But it's also lacrosse. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. Look it up. It's super, they're super fun games to go to. Very, just like hockey, like go, 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 fights, high pace. So it's good.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I like it.
Well, should we kick it off?
Yeah.
Is that thing record? Do we have a red light on that guy?
We did.
That one shows red and I see the record.
Yeah. We're right on that.
Okay. So on that note, I guess, welcome to the Big Tech Soreness podcast. I'm Ike. We have Ian today with us. And then our guests are Edgar and Jared from Edgar Sherman Design. So thank y'all for coming on.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
Absolutely.
This is cool. It's a cool setup here. And we love Big Tech. So it's always fun to get to work with you guys outside of just business relationships.
Yeah.
Get to have some fun. Yeah. Talk sports, talk shop, talk all the different things.
So on that note, do you want to give us like a little bit of background on you and how you started and, what got you into, this space?
Yeah. So as you said, my name's Edgar. So I founded Edgar Sherman Design probably end of 2017, beginning of 2018. I was going to college for industrial design at Wentworth Institute of Technology in Boston, Massachusetts. And I was having a really good time with that. Freshman year, I was on the hockey team and that was going really well. Sophomore year, I ended up not playing hockey and we were gone 3 to 8 PM every day. So 5 hours every day was gone for hockey. So then that window became available and I was like, okay, what do I do with all this extra time? And it kind of filled, like, there's always this passion that I had for service and the military. And I didn't have that team dynamic now with hockey gone. And so I was always looking into it. I was like, all right, well, maybe I'll start to look into that because I've always been interested in it. Like, I was going out and shooting with friends. I was like always passionate about that. I watched enough military movies to go and recite all the words of things. And so, I was always really interested in that. But the big thing for me was that passion for being part of something bigger than yourself. And so once I didn't have the team dynamic from hockey, that passion and that that feeling was gone. That basically of like, oh, I'm part of something bigger. Like I'm doing something for the team. I'm doing something that was gone. And so, that interest for serving started to kind of pop up and go, hey, well, maybe this is a different path that I should go for. And so I talked to some professors in college and I was like, hey, I'm kind of torn right now. I really enjoy what I'm doing in school, but there's something that's nagging in the back of my head saying like, you should go and enlist, you should go and try to serve and do something bigger, and greater than yourself. And so I had a lot of good conversations with them. They basically told me like, go where your heart is. If you're stuck here in class and you wish you were overseas serving for your country, then go do that. But I don't want you to be overseas and wishing that you were back in school. And so I called up some family friends. One of my dad's best friends was a former force reconnaissance guy, and he was an instructor for the selection process. And so I talked to him and I was like, hey, this is kind of where I'm at. And he's like, well, you have to give it 100%. You can't have any quit. And if you're going to do it, you need to leave everything else behind and just be there in the moment. And so I started to kind of gear that up. And so I shifted my scheduling and where I was working out all the time. I was going to the pool and swimming because that was one of my areas that I felt was a weakness. And so I was just working all the time towards that. Fast track a little bit. I ended up getting medically disqualified. I have what's called eosinophilic esophagitis, which is basically a bunch of eosinophils in your esophagus. For lack of better terms, my esophagus is like constricted and I choke on food all the time. And it turns out it's mostly from food allergies. So like I'm allergic to soy and peanuts and a bunch of other stuff. So that sucks.
Can't have anything.
No. And so I was always kind of pushing, like I knew that was a problem. I went and did like a beryllium swallow, which they just go and kind of, you drink this chalky, gross liquid and they tell you what your esophagus looks like. Yeah. And they're like, well, you don't have cancer, so that's good. I'm like, okay. They're like, but we're not really sure what this is. And so there's a lot of new research coming out around it. But basically, it's one of the immediate things that disqualify you from serving. Also, food allergies, which I later found out, caused that. And so I didn't know exactly what it was. And when I was gearing up to it, I was trying to figure out what that would be because I would choke on food all the time. I'm like, I can't be in the military and be choking. So I got to figure out what that is. And then that's when I was diagnosed with it. So that sucked. That hit hard. I was like, okay, well, I'm not playing hockey right now, so I don't have that team dynamic. I don't have the military that I can go through here. But like those passions for being part of something bigger are still there.
Yeah.
Those didn't go away. And so I was like, well, why don't I put the two and two together? I have what's going on in school for design, and that's going really well for me. And I have that drive, that passion for the service. So why not put those two worlds together? Because at first I always thought that you had to have been in the military to experience those things before you could ever design something for someone there. And there's a component of that that makes sense. But the reality is that designers as a whole are going to go and create the solutions for end users. End users didn't go to design school, so they don't know all the backgrounds of how to do all those different things. And they'll create solutions based on the problems they see, but they don't have the whole background of it. I mean, it's the same thing the military. You spend all this time in schoolhouses to go and perfect the art of whatever specific craft you have there. And so like it's the same kind of concept there. And so what I realized was, well, why not blend those two worlds together and then see if I can get to results in a faster or better application because I have some interest in the military side. And I was doing precision shooting competitions. I had buddies who would take me out to shoot under night vision. So like I was building ghillie suits and learning how to like stalk and do field craft. And so I was doing all those things. And I put those two worlds together and ended up doing an internship at Ops Corps or Gentex. And while I was there, I did the basic intern things, but my mentor there, Jay, I asked him, I was like, hey, I'm here to go and try to make equipment for end users. Like that's my goal. That's what I feel is my purpose. I will do everything that you guys ask of me. Like if you need me to just go and file some stuff down to run coffee, whatever it is, the internship job is, but I want to design things. And so, they gave me projects that I could do on my own outside of the other things like photography or whatever I need to do. And I started getting a foothold there where I started creating projects that actually made sense. And then when we met with our end users, we could get to results a lot quicker because I had basic understandings of marksmanship and equipment and the different things that guys go through. And so I would just have these amazing conversations with some of the end users there. And we were working on ballistic mandibles at one point, and we couldn't, like, I picked up one of the blue guns that was there and was like, I can't actually see down my sights here unless I have a 6-inch riser, and risers aren't cool right now. Yeah. So, and so we changed the ergonomics of it so you could go get a cheek weld through there and you could actually see through your sights. And so because I was going out and training and doing those things, that led me into understanding what end users are going through further. So that way, when we had conversations with end users, we could get a lot further faster because we weren't going over those basic things. We are now working on the advanced intricacies of different tactics and different things like that.
Nice.
So that kind of showed me I was on the right path. Ended up studying abroad in Germany for a little bit, which was a really cool experience because I got to go to BMW's facilities and learn how they manufacture. I got to go to a bunch of different historical museums for like World War II over on Museum Island in Berlin and just learned a lot. And it was really, really cool exposure to design. And it just kind of inspired further things from that and taking inspiration outside of the military industry. So to, like we are learning things from BMW or from Mercedes and applying different design fundamentals into the military side of things to get way better results because they're masters of their craft there. But like in manufacturing, I mean, they had we were in their facility and there were multi-million dollar robots that are just going through everything and cutting out all the different shapes. And so there's a lot to learn from that. Did a second internship at OpsCore, ended up designing components that are on the latest helmet systems and getting to front some projects there that earned contracts with the Marine Corps and with other units too, which was really awesome. And I decided, all right, well, let's take everything that I've learned from my time in school, studying abroad and OpsCore, and let's create something of my own. And so I created the ESD Sling. So I looked in the market and I was going out to the range and I was trying all sorts of different rifle slings and I just never fell in love. I loved lots of little components of all of them, but I didn't feel like it was a complete system where I was like, okay, I like the quick adjust of this, but I don't like the mounting system here, or I don't like the pad on this. I like the slim design here, but this webbing's too coarse. And so I was like, all right, let's go through the whole design process and do that. And so I created the ESD Sling. There's been probably like 12 different variations of it over the years, but small little tweaks that I'd refine and such. But I created that and I put it up on social media and I was like, all right, here's what I created. And then I started getting orders on the website. And so I'd bike to and from class and just run a sewing machine and sew up some slings.
Nice.
And then I'd ship those out. And then all of a sudden it was like, okay, I've got guys from SF teams overseas using this now. I've got, I'm getting small unit purchases. I'm getting guys reaching out like for SWAT teams and local law enforcement, and it kind of just kicked it all off. My fiance or girlfriend at the time, she was going around telling people, oh, he's going to start his own company. And I was going around telling friends, like, I'm not really sure what I'm going to do yet. Like, I might go try to like get a job here or whatever. And she's like, no, he's starting his own company. And so, yeah, lo and behold, ESD was founded. And then Fast Track Now, we're a decent sized company. And I hired Jared on to the team. And we've kind of developed a whole new product line. We're getting away from just being the sling company. And we've got a lot of really cool things in store. But I would say that's the long, short story of how ESD was founded.
Nice.
Yeah. Very cool.
Jared, do you want to break down your entry to the team?
So I started out in the industry at a large manufacturer, probably the largest in the industry right now. So when I first started there, you know, got hired on. It was one of those jobs that I found out that I was good at sales and I wanted to sell something I was passionate about. And I was already going to the range and shooting and stuff like that. And where I was located in New Hampshire has a very large manufacturer right down the street. Yeah. So
Hi, I'm Chris from Big Tex
Ordnance. And I'm Ian from Big Tex
Ordnance. And today we've got the weekly update. So first off, from Voltor is the classic Myrrh upper receivers, right? So we've got them in foliage green, black, standard black. Those are my picks. What do you got over there?
For all the wheel gun enthusiasts out there, we've started carrying some Safariland Comp 3 and Comp 2 speed loaders for J frames and K frames. So if you guys need a good speed loader for all of your revolver needs, we got some. We have the new Streamlight Wedge XT also. These come in black and FDE. Great little task light. You know, drop your keys underneath the couch. You're looking for your burrito. Good little option from Streamlight. Comes with a little lanyard on it as well.
Solid price point on those. I'll have to reference the price point on those.
USB-C rechargeable, and it has a deep carry pocket clip on it.
Yeah, so option.
Looks great.
Coming up, there's a bunch of classes. We got Paradox training. Gonna be across the street at the range. Doing that the 27th, not this weekend, but next weekend. Anyway, lots of training events coming up. We just also posted the Sons of Liberty.
Oh, yeah, the Armors
class. Armors class in May. It's up on the website. Anyway, thanks for watching.
Be safe.
Finger guns.
I started applying there, and I didn't know that it was kind of like the buddy system over there, where you had to like know somebody in order to get an interview. So, you know, I worked selling cell phones for a while out of a little kiosk in the mall. I was that asshole that was asking you what your phone plan looked like on the way by. And then a kid that I knew growing up and stuff like that walked by with a team shirt on, and I was like, hey, man, do you work at SIG? And he was like, yeah. I was like, hey, I have a resume. Can you hand it off to somebody? And a couple weeks later, I got a call and went in, interviewed, and got a job. So
nice.
Started off in customer service there, just answering phones, and then worked my way up to commercial sales. So that was back before they had a team that was exclusively on the road. They had like six guys on the road and six guys in the office. Mm. And so I was, that was a phone warrior. And, you know, I handled Alaska, Washington, or in Oregon, and then all the way over to Maine. So that whole top
Just section the whole of the top country. Of the US,
yeah. So I had like 17 states that were mine, and, you know, slowly built my way up there. And then, you know, they wanted to hire on a larger outside sales presence. So I got moved to the outside and just kind of cut my teeth over there. And obviously the company, when I first started, had a couple hundred people. Now it's got a few thousand people over there. So it's blown up pretty big. But, you know, the relationships that I built there and the knowledge that I gained from there was huge. I worked with a lot of really cool guys. John Hollister, that's he's still over there. Now, you know, I worked with Kevin Bradingham when he was there. Special Weapons Group and stuff like that. Worked on the MCX program, Rattler program, all that kind of stuff. So nice. I was sales and operations for the Silencer team for a few years. So, you know, it, you tell somebody that you were at SIG for 10 years, it's kind of like dog years in this industry. it's a long time to be there. But it was great. Met a lot of amazing people. And the groups that I was working with a lot of those contract programs were the same groups that we work with now. So, you know, Edgar and I met at a range little...
With Parker Mount Machine.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. So, you know, Jared from Parker Mount Machine, he ended up purchasing a pretty large swath of land. But before that, we were just shooting in a sand pit. And... But we weren't just like your FUDs going out there shooting at trash and shit like that. Like, we'd show up with, you know, drills that we were going to run. We ran out of timer. We held everybody to accountability standards and stuff like that. Cold start drills, whole nine yards. So it was actually training, which was nice. At SIG, one of the benefits when you worked there, I'm not sure if it's still the same way now, but you got to train for free over at the academy.
Yeah.
So when I was there, I spent... If I wasn't working, I was at the academy training. So it was one of those things that was free for me. So I went there. At the time, I had a Rifle Dynamics AK, a 1911, and a Glock 17. Those were like my only guns that I had in my stable. So, you know, just kind of grew from there. And but training, I ended up meeting up with Edgar and, you know, knew what he was all about with building slings and stuff like that. So chit-chatted. Stopped over at the shop, made me quit smoking because I had to climb three stories of the mill building and realize that, you know, I can't be doing that anymore. So put down the butts. And, you know, we would always joke around about like, hey, once I get bigger, I'm going to need somebody to come in and do sales and operations for the company. And I was like, you say when, man, and I'll jump ship. So, you know, there was one day that he mentioned it, and we had like a maybe 5-minute conversation about what I was going to be doing with the company. And he hired me on and then left for fucking Africa for a month, like the next day. And so he left. It was just me in the office while he was gone and, you know, built the desks and stuff like that. He had one desk that was there and then in this big mill space. So I was in there, you know, kind of set up the office space and, dug into the business side of it, you know, who's making our gear, how much they're charging us, all that kind of stuff. And unfortunately, in the industry, every industry, but and what I've noticed in this one in particular is that there's a lot of people that say that they're friends with you and, hey, we'll hook you up and stuff like that. And then once I started looking into the books, I was like, oh, okay, Edgar's a super nice dude. So he just has people taking advantage of him left and right. So I... I have no problem with burning bridges if they need to be burned. So I just started, you know,
put the kibosh on that.
Yeah, man. I just like it. That's just who I am. You know, it's you fuck with a friend. I'm done with it. So I started the long search to find a manufacturer that could not only keep up with our production, but our quality standard. So at the time I was getting like a 60% QC fail rate.
Oh man.
And damn. You can't run a company on that.
We'd have to order more of the product to go and
to get what you want,
to get what you wanted. And then we'd have to go through back and forth of being like, here are all the problems with this. Can you please fix this? And then be like, oh yeah, we'll get on that. And then all the problems we fixed from the last time would show up in the next one. Or it would be like, we'd get the same stuff back as if they literally just took it and they just returned it to us.
Yeah.
And we're
yeah.
like, did you not look at this? Like, there's no tag on this. Like, the bar tack is sideways. Like, this is missing a pull tab. What is this?
Yeah, just a myriad of problems with it, but not something that you can take a company to the next level.
Yeah, it's either, like, if it's that far removed, it's basically a lost cause.
Yep. So, started probably a 6-month hunt to find a sew shop that kind of could meet the standard. And found a guy. We call him Mr. X. Nobody knows about him. dude doesn't even have a fucking website. He's not on Instagram. He's not in the industry drama bullshit that happens in this industry. And you know, met up with him, and he was a great dude. Had great people working for him. Gave him our stuff, and he immediately called me and said, "Hey, I'm gonna have to basically revamp a large part of my facility in order to keep up with your quality standard. It'll take me a while, but I'm confident that we can do it." I said, okay. And, you know, I think out of the last 10,000 slings we've gotten, probably 20 of them have been QC fails.
Oh, wow.
And, it's generally the webbing itself that comes from a mill somewhere that they'll screw up.
Yeah.
So, but it's
only one of them was a failure on like the manufacturing side, and that was maybe like a tag had been like run out of thread or something.
Yeah, or a pull tab's looped.
Yeah,
the upside down.
That's
or something like that. But I mean, tiny issues in comparison to what we were dealing with before. But you know, got our cost where we needed to be at, but still maintaining the Berry compliance and all that kind of stuff, which is extremely important to us. And then that allowed us to, you know, come out with the sap bucket right on the heels of that, the Magwell, so on and so forth. So, you know, and working with Chris and chatting with him, and this is the same story that a lot of our dealers and distributors will tell us, that like that the slings sell really well, but in order to like really make it to the next level, you have to do more than just the slings.
So, yeah.
You know, right now we've got a ton of projects on the lineup. 60 something, and working our way through it. And a lot of them come with, you know, the relationships that we've built on the operational side of things, with the military, that, you know, they'll ask us, hey, can you make a doodad for this? You know, we go through the process, we make them that little piece of kit, they like it, and then we sit down as a team and say, hey, is this a commercially viable option? Like, are people going to buy it at Big Tech's ordinance, or is this a specific military thing that they want? Not that, I mean, I'm sure there are some of the guys on the internet, like the cloners and shit like that, that would buy something just because,
hey, the LARP is real, man.
yeah
need, man. That trip,
yeah, for real. So but you know, kind of built the company up, so you know, it started with obviously just Edgar, and then and now we have about 10 people.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Somewhere along those lines.
10 guys on the team, I think 4 of which are remote.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, I mean, we're doing a bit. My constant day to day is like, you know, my orders are going up, so my production has to go up, and then my orders go up, and then my shipping and receiving guys are like, fuck, we have way too much shit coming in. And then we hire on another shipping and receiving person, and, you know, just dialing up slowly and surely. But, from, you know, 2.5 years ago when I first picked up to where we're at now, we're a completely different company. So it's nice to see. One thing for me that's important is that, you know, as far as the team atmosphere is concerned, is that I want everybody on the team to be successful in life, not just at ESD. Because I'm sure a lot of us have gone through times where, you know, you've got your card at the gas pump and you're like, man, there's $16 in this thing and I need to buy dinner tonight too. And you game it. So you end up, you know, making it to the next paycheck. I don't want anybody on the team to have that feeling ever. Mm-hmm. So, you know, as we grow and stuff like that, we really want to hire on people that, like a nice friendly work environment, but also want to stay there for the long haul, you know, go there with us through the slow times and the good times and all that kind of stuff. So I think that that's the atmosphere that we've built. Edgar's very, very laid back as far as a boss is concerned, you know. It's not like everybody has to be here at fucking 7 a.m. yeah. for coffee and everything else. Cause you know, there's a lot of guys on the team that they'll get there at 7, but no, myself included, I'm not going to be productive for about 3 hours until I actually wake up.
So I've had two cups of coffee and you know,
yeah, man. And you know, having lived in that atmosphere for a while where like you got to be at your desk at this time or you get spoken to about it, you know, it's just not conducive for productivity at all. So, you know, it's a really great atmosphere. Everybody that works there is just, you know, everybody's great at what they do. So it's a fun place.
Yeah. It's exciting. I think the big thing for me is similar to you'll see in special operations, like with an ODA, you have a team where you can rely on everyone. And you know they're going to get the job done, but it's that small dynamic. It's not like big army where you don't necessarily know the people in the team kind of thing. And I see that with a lot of other corporations and big companies where like you'll have the small group that you're with. But for me, I'd much rather go and build a really tight core team for the long term and then go and utilize manufacturers within the industry or outside of the industry that can go and meet the standards that we have and USA made with Berry compliance and everything, and build that core team and then utilize all the other great manufacturers within the area. Because I'm not a manufacturing expert. I've taken courses on it. I understand the basic principles. So when I'm designing things, I can look into, okay, can we make this? What are the limitations of it? But there are companies out there that are specialists in it and they've been doing it their entire like career. And that's the whole purpose of the business. And so for me, I want to build a really tight knit core team, that can go and make, or that can go solve problems and go and just have a really good dynamic there. And, I'm pretty proud of that aspect of things. We've got a good group of people who it's fun to go to work, which is a nice change of things. Yeah. Like you're not kind of like, oh God, I gotta get up and go do this. It's like, no, like, this is fun.
Yeah.
I get to hang out with my friends and we get to make really cool stuff and meet really cool people and do really cool things. And at the end of the day, like we know that we're helping people. Like we are getting feedback from guys being like, hey, just used your sling on this deployment, smoked a bunch of bad dudes, got all these caches, saved a bunch of people. Like this is awesome. And so it's a cool experience to be able to do that and kind of say like, yeah, we had a small part in that. Like we helped our end users go a little bit further, a little bit faster. And at the end of the day, like they're appreciative of it too. And so, I mean, we've built a great core team and, we've got to meet some really cool people over the last few years. So
nice.
Yeah. And building the relationship with dealers and stuff like that too. One thing that I saw as kind of a shortcoming in the industry is that, you know, you'll have a manufacturer that'll build a new product and, they'll release it and screw over all their dealers because their dealers don't have it in stock yet. You know, you get a call for the new, whatever, flashlight. And it's like, we've been talking about this thing for a year and a half, been hyping it up, and you can buy it on our website, but you can't get it at any dealer. And then you guys are pulling your hair out because you don't have it in stock and everybody wants it. And then once that wave hits the beach, all of a sudden you get all your shit and now it just sits on the shelf. So we have a big thing at the, at ESD where, you know, I'm not going to launch a new product until my dealers have it in hand on the shelf. And we actually just pushed back a launch recently with the Vietnam Tiger Stripe sling. And it's because we got them in-house, but because UPS and the holidays and stuff like that, I couldn't guarantee that the stuff was going to land on your doorstep and be able to get put online before we launched. So we're like, you know what? We'll push it back a week. And it's one of those things that we did, and I don't expect a pat on the back for it or anything like that, but it's something that I've seen in the industry is rare. You know,
it helps everyone so much too.
Yeah, man. Yeah. Everybody gets to eat from the same table. You're not getting scraps on the side. So yeah.
It's also better for the consumer too, because instead of just having to go to one place like that only sells that, you know, you can go to any of the, you know, pretty big dealer network, you know, and be able to get it at different places. Yeah.
And each dealer has their diehard people that like, I don't care if, you know, ESD is selling it on their own website. I want to buy it from Big Tex, or I want to buy it from Weapon Outfitters, or whoever it is. You know, you have those people that are, you know, hardcore followers of that stuff, and that's fine with us. Yeah. You know, they don't have to buy it from us. But yeah, so dealer network has been built up to the point where now it's a well-oiled machine, and it's great.
Yeah. One thing you kind of touched on there is that it's about getting people the product that they want. We don't really care how that happens, in the sense of like, we want it to be like, if it's not through us, that's okay. And that's one thing that I care a lot about, because I know that there are limitations to any product that's ever been created, or any company. Like, we are not the best sock manufacturers, so we're going to go sell darn tough socks, like, because we know that they're one of the best. And so it's the same thing for that. It's like, all right, yeah, we could go and carry all these things, but we're not trying to be a dealer. We're not trying to go and just reshare that stuff, because we have people like you guys that are experts in that craft. And so we'll go and carry things that work in conjunction with our stuff, or go to our core beliefs and things like that. But if we can go and spread that to our, like, our network of dealers, and we can all go and get that out through there, like, it's going to help the end user. Cause for us, it's about making sure that people get the best product. If that's utilizing some other company's product, that's okay. We're fine with that. Do we want it to be ours? Yes, sure. But if it means that the mission will be achieved, or like, they'll have greater success with something else, then okay, that's fine. So if there's someone who wants to buy QD swivels from you guys versus paracord guides from us, that's okay. Like, we're fine with that. If they come to us later on, awesome. Or if they go to buy the paracord guides from you, like, even better.
Yeah.
So I think that's one thing that I always struggle with in this industry specifically, is a lot of companies are like, well, it's our road or the high road. Like, you can't go and buy someone else's stuff. Or it's like, no, we should be mix and matching stuff, because everyone's great at certain things. I mean, I always joke to Jared and other people, like friends, I'm like, all right, if you got SIG and HK and Beretta and just, you name it, Colt, all these different companies together, and they sat in a room and they're like, hey, we're going to split everything perfectly even amongst all of us, and we're going to design the ultimate handgun. Like, who's successful at the end of the day? All of our end users. You'd have the best handgun ever made. I mean, you can add whatever companies in there you want. If everyone worked in conjunction with one another, you're going to get the best results ever. But everyone's like, no. These are our kept secrets. We got to hide this. And I think that it's a shame for that, because the industry could be way more powerful. And at the end of the day, our end users are the ones who suffer the most from that, from not collaborating. And so, like, you'll see it in small scale of dealers not getting product at the same time of a launch. You'll see it of companies just going and not sharing different concepts or things like that. And it's disappointing. I think one thing that was really cool that Jared and I aligned on a lot is that, I guess, the suppressor industry is a little bit different for the most part.
Yeah, it's very different. There's I won't give away the secret of when and where it happens, but every year during SHOT Show, there's a certain location that all the silencer guys go to from every different manufacturer, and you sit down and you have food together and chit chat about new projects that are coming up, and it's just really laid back. You know, you pick up a fork and do the NDA wand to everybody at the table beforehand, and you know, everybody talks about shit that's coming up, because there's certain manufacturers that do stuff differently, and you know there are certain smaller manufacturers that can pivot quick on a small idea and stuff like that, that a larger manufacturer would never do. Yeah. You know, for instance, in the nylon stuff, you know, we get asked all the time, when are you going to make a gun belt? And it's like, well, there's 100 awesome companies making gun belts. We don't, I'm not going to make a Me Too product just to put the ESD logo on it to do a money grab, because, you know, people like our brand. Mm-hmm. You know, so like, we use AWS gear as our belts because they're American made, it's veteran owned, very compliant, all that kind of stuff. So, But yeah, the silencer industry is very different as far as that's concerned. I'm sure there's a few outliers in there that want to keep everything closer to their chest. But, you know, there was one experience that I had with, you know, the Aurora 2. Gemtech Aurora 2.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So it's threaded on both sides. And one side's half by 28 and the other side's 13.5 by 1 left-hand thread. And that happened at this little dinner that we were sitting at. Cause they were like, yeah, we want to make it so you can adapt it to different pistols, but everybody fucking hates thread adapters. Cause they, especially when you're doing left-hand to right-hand thread, it just sucks. You're constantly chasing it the whole time. And they were like, it's a wiped can, right? Like there's no directional baffles. And it was like, yeah, it's like, we just thread both ends. He was like, holy shit. And he like wrote it down on a napkin. And it turns out that's how they ended up releasing the product. So,
wow, that's cool.
Yeah. And that came from a much larger silencer manufacturer but they don't make a wiped can. So what does he care about it? He didn't have that idea and go, ooh, I'm going to make a knockoff of this thing, you know? So it's very different with the silencer guys. They're much more laid back, fun group kind of deal. But man, if you sat down engineers and idea guys from some of the big gun companies, that it would be a silent dinner. All you'd hear is forks.
All you'd hear is forks on the plate.
Hey, don't look at me that way.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But yeah, man, it's yeah, I don't know where I was going with that thought, but
no, it's, I mean, again, for us, it's about getting end users the best product. Ideally, if we can be that solution, awesome. But if we can't, we're going to go direct people to the right companies. And that's where I think the dealer network's great, because you might have your own internal biases, but you guys are choosing equipment that you know will help people, you know is good, and you trust putting your name behind it. And that can be from a hodgepodge mix of different companies. Like, I don't know, ARs are awesome because you can go and put a million different accessories on them. They're like Legos for adults. Like, you can just go and swap them out to whatever you want. There's no like, oh, I can only use this brand of thing on here. It's like, no, man, like, go put the grip you want on there. Go put the sling you want on there. Go put the optic you want on there. Like, mix and match it to what you want.
Yeah, you could have a B5 grip and a Magpul stock and a Hollow Sun on a aim point mount.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
Like, you can mix and match it to whatever your needs are, to your budget, to your limitations, and at the end of the day, you get what you want. But if everyone was like, no, you can only use my brand stuff, it's like, okay, well, we don't make a rifle. So, okay.
Well, there's also a lot of ego mixed into that, too, because you have to be okay with looking at yourself in the mirror and saying, I'm not the best at that one thing.
Yeah.
And that's something that I think a lot of manufacturers fall short on. And I mean, I've taken training classes before and stuff like that where, you know, you mentioned, we were talking about Pocket Doc earlier, Kerry Davis. And, you know, he's, in my humble opinion, I think he's one of the best medical guys in the industry, period, end of discussion. And it's one of those things that, you know, you go to a training class and you're like, oh, I'm going to be taking med classes. And they're like, well, we offer med classes too. I'm like, you do, but like, you have to be able to say you're not like awesome at that, right? You're good at this one thing that I just took a class for, but with the medical stuff, like, that dude's got it. Like, I'm going to go to him every single time. And that's who I'm going to recommend, which is why, you know, as far as gear stuff is concerned, you know, are we going to make a med kit or a med pouch or something like that? Maybe at some point. But there's, you know, Dark Angel Medical that does that extremely well. Mm-hmm. So why try to reinvent the wheel with that? We're not going to try to make a level 3 retention holster. You know, fucking Safariland's got that cornered and they're great at it. And so it's knowing what you're good at and, you know, staying in your lane as far as that's concerned and reaching out to the manufacturers that do stuff really well with an idea and saying, hey man, can we, like, we have an idea for your product. Can we make an exclusive for us kind of a deal? So I think that's where I think the industry is kind of turning a corner a little bit. I don't know if you guys have noticed that where, you know, I forget who broke it down for us. They called gun owners 1.0, 2.0 and 3.0.
Yeah. It was the 100 concept guys.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. And the 3.0 guys that all own manufacturers are now all talking.
Yeah.
And they're like friends with each other. So some really cool shit's going to be coming out. So I enjoy seeing that. I enjoy seeing it where it's going.
Yeah, that's cool. I think collaboration is really the next step to the evolution of the industry and going from there. Because again, everyone has their own unique skill sets and experiences. And when you put those worlds all together, you're going to get the best results.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's one of the acronyms of ESD is experience shaping design. So it's I talk about Eric a lot, but Eric's one of our designers. When we picked up Eric, he had never shot a gun before. Never even held one, was kind of nervous about him, yeah. Stuff like that. And now he goes to the range with us and he shoots and he's getting more comfortable with it.
He's a good shot,
too. Yeah, he is. Well, he had no bad habits.
Yeah. Clean slate.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah. He's like, teach me how to do this. And then he just follows instruction.
Yeah. You don't have to unlearn years of all this other bad.
Yeah. Exactly. But watching him solve a problem. When like a group reaches out to us and says, hey, we're having an issue with this, you know, having been in the group of knuckle draggers that all have the same brain in our head that all try to just like, I'm going to make this cube fit in this circle. Yeah. If I hit it hard enough with a fucking hammer, like that's one way to do it. And then he just has a completely different angle.
For you're like, why do we need to fit it in the circle?
Yeah.
Can we just move it over here?
Yeah.
Be like, oh my God, why didn't we think about that?
Yeah. Like the paracord guide was a prime example of something that was just, you know, tying paracord onto your rifle as an anchor point. And the only way to get paracord to not unravel on itself is to tie like two big overhand knots mm-hmm. into it mm-hmm. and burn it and put tape on it and all that. And then you have this big ass knot that's hanging out there. So we were like, we need a way to capture that knot.
Yeah.
And he's sitting there and he's like, why don't we just use a smaller knot? Like there are smaller knots that we can use. So that's how when he came out, the first gen, when he printed it for us as a demo, he handed it and we're like, oh, that's fucking genius. Yeah. Like, there we go. And like, you know,
that's why we hired you.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it was cool. Cause like, yeah, the team, we were filming an installation video for the ESD sling. So I was basically having to go and run through and explain it all. And I always talk about using paracord to tie it onto your rifle. And so my buddy Ross was there and Ross was like, you guys should make something better that can just like contain that. And then Eric was like, I have an idea. Cause originally it was just going to be like a tube. And then Eric just went full bore and just took it to this whole nother level. And we were like, this is not at all what we expected. And it's so much better. And so it was just that combination of like taking again, a bunch of different perspectives, because I had been going and then explaining how to set up the sling and how to go yep. use it and utilizing paracord off of what I had learned and all the tweaks there. And then we had another guy on the team go and point out like that could be done better. And then we had another guy on the team go like, I think I know how to make that better. And it was just that collective group of different perspectives and backgrounds. I mean, we had like our team as a whole, I mean, has a lot of different experiences and yep. everyone's points to me are very valid. And we'll go through and we'll take all that input and we'll basically put it together and we'll go, okay, what can we learn from all these different things? How can we go and make this better? And so, I mean, like the ESD sling, for example, when I originally created it, I had a elastic retainer through there, which is the regulator that you see by the quick adjust. So it'll go and make sure that the webbing stays flat, as you're adjusting it for smooth, reliable adjustment. But you can also go and tuck the rear section of the sling into it. So that way for vehicle operations or anything like that, it's not getting caught up. Mm-hmm. So guys in cruisers, civilian, military, whatever, getting in and out of vehicles, you don't have to worry about your sling getting caught. And then we did, I think it was like a photo shoot. And one of the guys there was either like a force reconnaissance guy in the past or MARSOC dude. And he's like, hey, I really like the concept of this, but it kind of sucks to have to keep stowing it and like stick my finger in through there and really try to like shove the webbing in. He's like, it's kind of a bitch to do. And so, he's like, I have an idea. And he's like, if you just like fold over the edge and you like sew it. And like, he had sent some photos and I was like, I get what you're going for. And that's a really good point of that is an issue. Like it is not great for reliability, like to go and keep doing that. And so then I stepped aside and I looked and I was like, all right, well, let's solve this as a designer. And I was like, wait a second, we can just invert the elastic and extend it a little bit. And now you have a little pull tab on there. So like the latest version of the sling is you have this little pull tab you can go grab
yep.
and you can go and tuck it. And so that's one thing that I think is really cool is that both Eric and I as designers we'll go and take all the feedback that we get from everyone in the team, everyone outside of the team, and then we'll go and do our designing to it. We'll go through the whole process of it and think about it differently. And I think that, like, as Jared was talking about, we have different perspectives to it. Like, we're looking into it not as the end user side per se. We're taking the feedback of it, but then we're looking at it from the design perspective. And that's why we're getting better results for a lot of these products, because we're not looking at it from the traditional thing. It's not, all right, well, we just need to make a whatever the product is, because that's in the market. It's a, okay, how can we go and see the different, like, what are all the problems that we're facing? What are all the input that we can get from everyone? And then let's go sift through that and learn what the real issues are, the core principles of it. And then let's go through the design process and create something really cool. But again, that input comes from everyone. Like, if you guys were like, hey, I was at the range and I noticed that when I was adjusting the sling or whatever, like, it was a little bit too tight here or something. What if you were to like increase the length by this? And we look at it and we're like, oh, what if we just change the sewing pattern to be a little bit longer for this instead of like increasing the length? And so it's like getting those different things there, I think, is just, it's a really fun component of the company. And it's cool to get that feedback, because we'll have feedback days, and we'll just, guys in the office will come in, like one of the guys from shipping receiving will come over and we'll be talking about something, and they'll just go and listen. We'll just learn, and they'll be like, hey, what if we did it this way? And we'll be like, that's actually a good idea. Like, let's try it out. Let's explore it. Like, it might need some refinement, but the idea is there.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. And they're not beholden to their design, no, which is one thing that I'm sure we've all dealt with in the past, is people being like, I made this thing and it's perfect and it's my baby and it can never be changed. And then you're like, ah, okay, it's not perfect. Like, it should be able to get, you know, changed and upgraded and smoothed out and honed over time and stuff like that. But they're very much, one thing is, though, you have to be able to articulate why it changed. It's not just, hey, like the pull tab.
Yep.
Hey, you should make the pull tab out of metal or whatever. And it's like, why? Like, it has a 45-pound breakaway strength for a reason.
Yeah.
So why do you want to install a heavy metal part on the gun? And it's like, oh, because metal's better. And it's like, that's not a good enough reason. Yeah. So,
no, that's a big component for us, is that in school, all of our professors teach you how to think critically, but also how to handle constructive criticism and how to criticize constructively. And so a lot of times you'll get people who be like, oh, I don't like that because it sucks. And you're like, okay, why? Like, can you explain? Can you articulate it? And eventually they might get to that. Sometimes they're just like, oh, well, it's just different. And you're like, okay, was different bad? And they're like, well, maybe not. And I'm just not used to it. Oh, okay. Well, let's go work through that. And then eventually they're like, actually, this wasn't a problem. I wasn't used to it. I mean, you see that a lot in shooting. Like, the evolution of shooting has gone. Everyone used to be like locked out, all like tight, all through their shoulders. And now we're like, no, let's just be more relaxed. Bring the gun to your eyes. Like, it's going to be a lot easier. You're going to be less fatigued. And like, you look at the past and it's like, if you tried to show that to someone then, they'd be like, that's wrong. That's not the right way. And you're like, okay, well, let's just look at it analytically and step out from our egos of it. Like, what we're doing now works. Could it be better? And let's try it out. Let's test it out. Let's see if that's actually better. And so I think for us, for Eric and I, like, yes, we're passionate about everything that we create, but if there's a chance to make it better, we're going to try to make it better. And we don't care where that feedback comes from. Like, as long as you can articulate the why behind it in a way that we can go and do our work for it and utilize our skill sets and our training, then we're all open to it. The only time there's an asterisk to that is if we finished a project and it's going into the production phase, and then someone's like, oh, have you thought about changing that? Or can you change that? And we're like, we just got it across the finish line. Like, it's in manufacturing now. Like, now all we can think about is making those changes, because they might be valid. But like, fuck, man. Like, that's the only time it's frustrating, because we're like, we checked it off in our boxes. Like, all right, we've gotten all the feedback. Like, the ego's checked at the door. We're good to go. And then that's the only time that it's like, oh, my God.
And part of my job is to grab Edgar and Eric and be like, okay, it's done. Let go of it so we can bring this to market, please.
Yeah, we're definitely perfectionists. For me, especially, because at the end of the day, this isn't a soccer ball or like something that is casual. It's, I don't know, things that go onto people's rifles where they're protecting their lives and the lives of their friends or their family. Like, it's a pretty important big deal. I mean, one example of that I learned is that I started working on a plate carrier design, and eventually that'll come to market. But at the time, I was limited in that we were trying to work through a lot of manufacturing issues with the slings. It was actually just me at the time. I think maybe I had one guy on the team to help with customer service. But I was going through the process and creating it, and I had some really cool, promising ideas. But I learned that if in testing, like, so if I got it out to an end user and they were on deployment, and if something failed on it and it hadn't been approved by SOCOM for purchasing or anything like that, or wasn't purchased through SOCOM or gone through any of their testing standards and it failed, their life insurance policy is now vetoed. So, like, they'll open, because they open investigations anytime that someone dies. They'll look through that process. Like, there's a reason that you're only supposed to use issued plates. They're going through, like, yes, tier one units can go buy the certain plates they want, but they're still purchasing them through the government going through, and there's some sort of testing, third party or whatever. And so when I was going through that, I was like, that's a really big burden. Like, I want to make sure this is perfect, and I'm not going to go and just casually release this and then do iterative design later on with our end users giving the feedback to this. I'm going to make sure it's perfect and that we can get it through the testing and regulation we need to later on. And so for me, that's a really important detail. Is like, we're not going to go and release something unless we trust our lives behind it. And like, there might be little tweaks that happen over time. Like, again, the sling, when I first released it to where it is now, there's a lot of little adjustments, but none of those adjustments are like things that would get you killed or anything like that. It's like, okay, increase the length a little bit further so you can get a better precision shooting spot and go and kind of utilize it to stabilize your rifle a little bit more. Or we changed the way the bar tacks are set up so it's even a little bit more durable, or it's easier to manufacture. Like, there's little tweaks like that. But as far as the end results, if any customer receives a product from us, like, we're making sure that it's done right. And if there's an issue with it, we're going to fix it. Like, there's no ifs, ands, or buts. It's like, we're going to work through those problems and make sure that it's done right, because at the end of the day, like, your life depends upon it. And we're not going to go and put our name behind it unless our life depends, like, unless we can trust it. And that's one of the reasons why the company is named Edgar Sherman Design, not because of egotistical reasons, is because
well, he says that. You know,
well, because when I was an end user, in the sense of like, I was buying my own gear and I'm trying to become a shooter and better understand, be able to protect myself and the people I cared about, like, I was looking at all these different companies, and if I ran into an issue, like, they had a big tactical name or whatever, and I'd reach out to customer service and they might fix the problem. Sometimes they might ignore it, whatever it is. But like, I didn't know who I was talking to.
Yeah.
It was Joe Schmo at whatever the place was. And that's fine. Like, it makes sense. But like, at the end of the day, I want to know that the actions of that business, like, if there are consequences, that they understand that and they understand the like importance of whatever it is they're doing, especially in this industry. And so for me, it's like, yes, you know, like, you know that if I've released it, my name's behind it. I know the product. I was designing the product. I might have had help through the way, or I might have just overseen some of it. But like, at the end of the day, I trust my life behind it, and I'm putting my name behind it.
Yeah, it's your name on there, you know?
Yeah, and like, to me, that's important. The only downside that I've run into is that, like, I became very accessible to everyone. I was like, oh God, I need to, like, mentally, like, I need some break from this, because I just couldn't function all the time, because I'd be like, oh my God, this issue's running in. Like, someone would leave a comment and they're like, this product sucks or whatever for X, Y, and Z. And I'm like, oh my God, did I fuck up? Like, did I do really bad? And it's like, oh, well, no,
it's just a troll.
Yeah. Like, oh, okay. All right. So, but that's an important thing to me, is that I would rather be honest and transparent than professional in a lot of ways. And I think a lot of companies will always try to be more professional than they will be honest or transparent. And I think for us, we're trying to step away from that. So that way, when end user, no matter what their background is using our stuff, they know that we believe in it. They know that who we are, and that we're going to, I mean, put our names behind it, and we're not hiding behind some iron curtain being like, we're the tactical, whatever LLC. And then we can just close that business and go start another business. And you have no idea who we are. So like, it's my name. I'm not going anywhere. Like, it's, I don't know. Everyone will be like, oh, are you going to do any other business? And I'm like, I don't really want to. Like, I just want to do this. I want to make this. I want to do this right for as long as I can. So, yeah.
I actually got a question. You brought up the Berry compliance thing.
Yeah.
Is that, I don't know really much about manufacturing. Is that has to be made in the U.S. with U.S. goods sold to?
Correct. Yeah. So the U.S. government created what's called the Berry Amendment. And so it's a twofold thing. One of the main reasons was to go and bring manufacturing stateside, especially at wartime, because if we are having manufacturers in China, for example, and we're going to war with China, that's a problem. And so the U.S. government looked at that and was like, all right, well, we need to keep manufacturing stateside so that way we can manage that and get the products that our end users need, especially in wartime. I mean, if you looked at World War II and we were trying to go get materials over from Germany, like, that's not going to go too well.
We're like, yeah, good luck with that.
Yeah. And so like, that was one of the reasons, was to go manage that side. And the other side was to go and keep manufacturing stateside to go and help with the economy. And so, the Berry Amendment's a really cool thing. It's sometimes a pain in the butt because a lot of manufacturing has tried to go overseas. overseas, and it's cheaper overseas, and sometimes the quality's better overseas, and it sucks because it's people realize that it's easier to go manufacture things over there than it is here. One good example of that is that there's a company, we bought a sewing machine from them. They started up and they were going to go manufacture masks right when COVID started. When no one knew what was going on, they're going to go manufacture masks and go help out with that. They spent, I don't know, hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars to get a facility set up, buy all the sewing machines, start figuring everything out. And they realized it was still cheaper to go manufacture everything in China after they had purchased everything, ooh, gone through all of that, and even with the timelines of that. So then they basically just shut down that company, and they shut down everything stateside, and then they just got everything made overseas, shipped over here because it was that much cheaper. And it's like, that's shitty.
Yeah.
Like, that's super shitty. And so for us, we don't have to follow the Berry Amendment for everything. Like, there are categories that you can kind of navigate that, tier one units and stuff that are... A lot of military units can, with general purchasing cards, can go and get whatever they want, even if it's not Berry compliant. Like, you'll see a lot of apparel stuff, like Arc'teryx, not everything, like almost none of it's now made in the United States or Canada or anything like that. A lot of it's over in Vietnam or China now. So like, you can still get that stuff, but for us, it's kind of it's not an option. And so everything that we have on the slings, every component of it is, every product we try to do is made in the United States with U.S. materials. So all the fabrics, all of the dyes, all like every component of it is now made in the United States.
The thread for the stitching.
Yep, thread for the stitching, the ink being used on the tags, like there's a whole setup to it. And so like we've definitely seen in this industry where companies will say made in USA and then they'll just go and take something that was imported and they'll go change out the tags or something like that. And there's none of that.
That was the biggest pain in the ass for me, was finding a made in the USA tag. Like if you look under the rear section of the sling, it says made in the USA and you flip it upside down, it says Berry compliant. Finding that physical tag made in the USA.
Yeah, you could go all over.
Made in the USA, made in China.
Made in the USA, yeah, except 100%. For the tag, which is made in China.
Yeah, exactly. It was ridiculous. And so, I mean,
I found one manufacturer that does it, and you know, it's a Berry. The tag itself is physically Berry compliant as well. But man, what a pain in the ass that was to find.
That's so super interesting. Like something like that, you would never think of, and that, you know, here you are trying to find that, and you're like, wow, this is. For something so small is so
well,
difficult.
It's a pain, and it's something that as a company we could have just been like, eh, you know, let's get the tag from Vietnam.
Yeah.
Like, who cares? It'll say "Made in the USA" on it. But then there was that in the back of the head, like,
but you'll know.
I don't know, man. Yeah, but I feel lying. Like I'm lying to people if this thing's not made in the USA. Yeah, so.
That's fraud.
Yeah, man. There's a word for that. Yeah. And, so yeah, I really busted ass to try to find it, and you know, our tag manufacturer is in Tennessee for our little ES tags, and you know, family owned business and stuff like that. So it's just good to be able to call people up on the phone and like, I know him, he's a car guy, I'm a car guy, we chit chat about cars, and he gets us a great product at a good price, and it's all made by Americans in the United States. So
yeah, it's been like little side note, like super cool doing this podcast and like getting to know you guys, and then like that little backstory, something like that where you would never know.
Yeah,
but like that's really cool to find that out, like that's legit, all made down to the little tag.
Yeah, man.
In the US.
Yeah. It's cool too to see, like, when you start to look at all the different things, like we find like the manufacturer we use for our pull tabs is also in New Hampshire, and they're like a 30-minute drive away. And like we had just picked them because they could fit all the different things for ITAR regulation, Berry compliant, like all of that. And then we were like, oh, they're actually local to us. And then we were looking at like a lot of the material shops to go through to get like webbing or Cordura and stuff. And we're going through and we're like, yeah, it's got to be some mill out of like Pennsylvania or something. And it's like, no, that's in Massachusetts. And we're like, oh, it's like a 40-minute drive from us. Or yeah. It's in Rhode Island. And we're like, huh. Like a lot of the industrial complex for the military is actually all in New England, which is kind of funny.
Yeah.
I mean, like New Hampshire as a whole has a lot of firearms manufacturers. But New England as a whole is just like filled. I mean, we've got BAE, we've got Lockheed Martin, we've got Gentex, we've got like Hughes there.
Elbit's there.
Elbit, L3. Yeah. Like yeah. All of these companies are there. And it's kind of like once you get to like, you open up those curtains and you start to look through, you're like, oh my God, there's so much there. I remember when I was looking for an internship, because at our school you have the co-op program, and I was looking for the internships. And I found Ops Corps, and I was like going through because I knew of Ops Corps. I had worn the helmets before, and everything there. And I was like trying to figure out where they were. And I'm like, oh, they're in Seaport in Boston. Oh, cool. That's like a 25-minute bike ride for me from my campus. Like, that's all right. And then I was looking further. And I'm like, oh, they're all Wentworth alums. Oh, this is even better. So like it worked perfectly. And so it's really funny to kind of see those other sides. But it's like one of those things of like looking farm to table with your food. You're like, oh, these eggs came from this farm and these different areas here. It's like we're starting to do that with the industry. And I think it's really cool to see that and kind of have those relationships, because a lot of these companies are family owned business that have been going on for hundreds of years. And like we're supplying our soldiers with equipment back in Vietnam or even World War II. Like it's crazy to see that kind of lineage is still there. The other side that's really cool and important about the Bear Amendment is when COVID kicked off, like you could see all of the like Chinese tactical companies for like airsofters and stuff, they were all running into supply issues. But everyone that was stateside, we all saw a huge skyrocket in orders for us, which was great for all the small businesses, especially in the nylon industry. But the only downside of that is that every company realized, oh, maybe I should start getting my stuff made in the U.S. And so then all of the orders for materials started to skyrocket.
Yeah.
Like, same thing you guys probably noticed with ammo. Like it drove me crazy. We had all these new gun owners and like, this is amazing. Like we've got Democrats, we've got Republicans, we've got independent, everyone, like we don't care who they are. We have more gun owners in the United States than we've ever had before. That's really awesome. But they're all buying the training ammo because it's cheapest.
Yeah.
And they're not buying defensive ammo to protect their homes. Mm-hmm. And now I can't go train. It's like, ah. So it's funny, the supply demand issue. But I think that these last few years have been really good.
It became way more important to everybody in the last couple of years.
Most definitely.
Yeah. And you could tell with some manufacturers that are out there that say made in the USA, and all of a sudden they're out of stock and everything. And you're like, why are you out of stock?
Yeah.
If you're made in the USA, they're like, oh, supply issues. Yeah. I'm like, oh, motherfuckers, I know where your shit's coming from now.
100%.
But it became important for us too. And, you know, just keeping that going and having the, like, when we come up with a new product, you know, now I've got somebody who does woven tags that are very compliant. So all my woven tags are going to go through that manufacturer now, just because I know them by name, they know me by name, and they build a good product and it's very compliant. So with the sap bucket, with their little Edgar Sherman design tag that's on there, it was just a, you know, copy paste thing to an email to them. They sent us samples of the tags and it's like, cool, we got it now. So, you know, the probably 6 to 8 months worth of work finding all of those places was,
yeah, you'll be able to use it for everything.
Yeah, it was a headache for me, but that's it. That's about it. You know, the end users get a much better benefit out of that at the end of the day. And when I call them up, they can turn. They don't have supply issues. They make their own stuff.
Yeah,
you know, the tag company that we use in Tennessee, CN Clark, they make a fabric called Edge Straight, and he got it. You know, it passed all the military standards for fading and toxicity and all that kind of stuff. And when I first contacted them, I was like, hey, you know, right now we've got the, what kind of tag was it? Laser something?
Thermal printed.
Thermal printed tags, which are good for fast production, but, you know, over time they fade extremely fast. They tear easily. They're not great. So I just asked if, like, hey, can you do thermal printing for us? And, he was like, we can, but we have this new product that's going through testing right now, and you guys can be one of the first people to kind of use it if you want once it gets through testing and evaluation and stuff. I sent him our, like, Edgar Sherman design file for the actual tag, and, you know, he hit me back. And it was good to have, like, just a direct line to the guy that calls the shots at this company.
Yeah.
And, you know, he and his sister run the place, and it's fucking great to deal with them. They're awesome people. But, you know, he contacted me back and was like, hey, I think for the quality that you're looking for, if we did, you know, a flat stamp printing kind of a deal, it would turn out better and would be a better product over time. I'm like, yeah, send me a little baggie of them and we'll see. And, you know, ended up going with that. But it's one of those things that if you farm it out overseas, you know, they're not going to have the care behind it to be like, well, we could do it this way, but
I'm just going to sell you something.
Yeah, exactly, 100%. Man. So, and we ended up getting that tag from them, and it's been working out awesome. But, you know, I make a phone call and I get tags 3 days later. It's not something that I have to send an email overseas and wait for it to get in on a shipping container and hit our docks and whether or not it gets tied up there and all that kind of stuff. So
yeah, it's cool too, because we all, like, everyone that we're working with, we're all, like, I mean, different size scale businesses, but it's all, like, everyone's on the same path and, like, hey, we're out to go make good things and support local companies and work together. I mean, like, it's cool. I mean, we sent, I think, a sling to one of our tag, like, one of the tag manufacturers because... Yeah. The woman that we interact with there, like her husband or her dad was like having a birthday and he, like, she had shown the stuff to him and he's like, that's really cool. I'd love one of those. And so I'm like, yeah, here you go. Like, and it's just that it's a good relationship there. And it's cool to kind of have that network because we support each other with that. And I think we've run into that too with you guys where it's like, hey, we have a little bit too much inventory of this. And you guys are like, all right, we'll pick that up. And you're like, hey, this product's not moving as well for the shelves. Can we get a different colorway? We'll swap it out.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, you don't get that when it's just a foreign entity that doesn't really care. And it's, we're all people. We're all in the same like boat together. We're all trying to be successful. Like, it's a really cool balance to have that and have those interactions and build those relationships.
Yeah, it does mean no good to have, you know, big techs have a colorway that just sits there on the shelf. That does me no good, does you no good, so why wouldn't I swap it out for it? You know, and if we had like a big corporate umbrella over it with all these rules and stuff, like, well, yeah, you can send it back, but there's a 35% restocking fee on it. And it's like, don't fuck people over, man. Just be a good guy and they'll keep on ordering from
you. Yeah. I actually need to pick up one of the Tiger Stripe slings for one of my rifles.
It would look good on there. It turned out nice.
Yeah,
they did. I was impressed with it, and the lighter tan in there matched our sand pull tabs like perfectly. So that's the pull tabs I got on my zipper on my backpack. It's like a lighter tan, and you know, when they came in, we were just going to go with the mud pull tab because it's a desert Tiger Stripe, and then we held it next to it. We're like, oh shit, that's cool. That matches perfectly.
Which worked out really great because when I was ordering pull tabs a few years ago and like going through everything, I was trying to get all the color matching through. And to go and again, go into the like made in US materials and sourcing all those things, their color limitations were a factor too. And so I was like, that color looks really good. I looked at the swatch. I'm like, I think that would pair up well through here. And I get the order in because it's like a dye process, like anodizing and stuff. It wasn't quite the same. And I'm like, these are way too bright for normal slings. And so we had a bunch of inventory of it. And it's like, well, I mean, these are great. We sold them on the website where like everyone's using them for different things, but they just didn't have that perfect match. And then it was like that eureka moment of like, oh, these are perfect together. Yes. We can move the 10,000 pull tabs that have been sitting on the shelf over here. Yeah. So
winning.
Yeah, 100%.
So you guys will see the sap buckets. They're being sewn current this week. So Desert Tiger Stripe and Vietnam Tiger Stripe
nice.
For the sap buckets. So
yeah, they look cool. The seeing 500 denier with that pattern it's pretty sweet. Because like slings, you get a sample of the pattern, like you can see like some of the sections of it, and it's cool. But when you see it in that larger scale, you're like, oh, that's sexy. Like that's nice. I don't know. Especially seeing like the photos of like ODA guys wearing the Tiger Stripe again, you're like,
yeah,
okay, Vietnam Tiger Stripe's back. Like I'm gonna go listen to some like podcasts and like listen to some old books from Vietnam, maybe watch some old movies.
Nice.
Yeah, it's nostalgic definitely, but but yeah, you'll see some new colorways and stuff this year coming out for us. We just launched our Granite Grip, which is our AR pistol grip. Yeah. We did a deep dive on YouTube about it, just, you know, all the specifics of it. And then we've got a new grip coming right on the heels of that probably next month. It's just a chopped version of it for like bag guns and submachine guns and stuff like that.
So nice. We'll call it the Pebble Grip. Nice. So. Granite Grip is a nice ode to Granite State in New Hampshire. And then we were like, we need to come up with a smaller version just for bad guns. Like, what if we call it the Pebble Grip?
Nice.
And we were joking about that in the office. And then it kind of, we were like, ah, no. And it kept coming back. And we're like, no, let's do it.
Yeah.
Fuck it. Like, like we're calling one product the Swivla. Like, it's to have a nice little Boston accent. Yeah, the Pebble Grip. That's fantastic. And so,
I love that Eric hated the name Swivla so much.
Oh, yeah.
And he just got outvoted.
Yeah. And he likes it now. Like, he won't tell us that, but we can see that he likes it. It's one of those things, like, Eric as a designer, he's very skilled and very traditional, like, loves a lot of the modern, companies that are out there and traditional design, like Bang & Olufsen is a really big one. Like, there are a lot of companies that you see in the design world and that are completely separate from everything we're doing. And we're like, we're going to have the professionalism of that, the aesthetics of that, that nice Scandinavian design, the functionality that we need, the American manufacturing style. And we're going to go give it a name that completely counters all of that. That gets people saying Swivla. Our joke in the office is like, there's a really funny Saturday Night Live skit, and it's the Dunkin' Donuts skit. And it's got like Casey Affleck or something like that. And it's just them just representing like a Bostonian or just like someone from Massachusetts for the most part. And it's fucking hilarious. It's like, Dewey, clip your fucking fingernails. it's funny.
So we were going to call it the Swiveler because it swivels. And I was like, that's fucking boring. You know, I've sat enough when I was at SIG sitting in naming conventions. I'd rather watch paint dry. It's awful. And Hollister at one point was like, you know, we're going to run out of poisonous snakes at some point. there's only a handful.
Yeah, there's only things. It's a limited pool.
Yeah. So we were trying to come up with a fun name. And, you know, somebody, I forget who it was, threw a Boston accent on it. And we're like, that's perfect. So I've got a friend of mine, Mike the Plumber, and he's originally from Massachusetts, and he is the quintessential Boston accent, like always, all the time, as hard as it goes. And
Hockey Con Harvard Yard.
And
the packy.
So we called.
I got my khakis.
So we called it the Swivla, and I called him up and put him on speakerphone in the office, and I was like, "Hey, Mike, we just named a new product, and we named it for you." And he's like, fuck you, you did. And he's like, no, you didn't. Like, go fuck yourself, dude. And I'm like, no, we called it the Swivla. And he was just like, get out of here. Did you really? I'm like, yeah, that's all for you, man.
He said it perfectly.
Oh, yeah.
We wish we recorded the phone conversation. We'd just use it for an advertisement.
Yeah. I still want to get him in office to do the deep dive on the Swivla for us. Because I think that would just be hilarious to watch him stumble through that and swear his head off the whole time.
That would be very funny. Yep. It was my buddy Chip. He was the one who came up with the idea.
Chip?
Yep. Yeah, because we posted up a little feedback thing on Instagram and people would respond. And my buddy Chip responded into it. And he said that. And I was like, son of a bitch. He's onto something. And I called him up for it. He's like, I just think it'd be hilarious. I was like, that is pretty funny. And then we got Mike to say it, and we were like, yeah, it's 100%. Oh, yeah. That's solidified.
Nice. So where can folks find y'all? On social media?
Yeah, so you can find us on Instagram, Edgar Sherman Design. Facebook, Edgar Sherman Design. Website, Edgar Sherman Design. Basically, there's a theme to that.
Yeah.
And YouTube as well. We're really trying to do a lot more on YouTube for the educational side of things.
Yeah.
Instagram's great to see kind of the sexy stuff and like some of the action. YouTube's going to be where a lot of the long form is. Our website, we just have a new blog as well.
Nice.
We're starting to go and put more information on there and so kind of do more deep dives. If we're releasing a new product, like I'll go do a write-up that's further than what's just on the product page. You're not just getting the quick rundown. You're getting more of the why we did this, the different criteria behind it, things like that. So you can check us out on all those different things. And that's kind of the main thing. If you have questions about anything, hit us up on Instagram. If it's customer service stuff, shoot us an email. But that's kind of the setup for that.
Cool. Customer service email.
Yeah, contact@edgarshermandesign.com.
There we go. Hey, there's that name again.
Yeah. My favorite is when I'll be emailing with someone and they'll spell my name wrong in the email I'll be like, you emailed Edgar@edgarshermandesign.com. In there, there's the website link, edgarshermandesign.com. My signature, Edgar Sherman. And then there's
and you called me Edward.
Yeah. It's like, I'm not egotistical with this. This is more just funny and also kind of like, I hope this was autocorrect. that's where you can find us. We'll be around for SHOT Show. I don't know when this is coming out, but we're kind of wandering around a little bit and then getting the heck out of here.
Yeah.
Trying to avoid whatever new plague comes out of SHOT Show. Yeah. And then,
the biggest voodoo crud.
Yep. Yeah. We're in Nashua, New Hampshire. We are kind of like a meeting only setup for people to see the shop, but we have our stuff in a lot of the local stores there.
Nice.
So if anyone wants to go check it out there, and then obviously go support Big Tex and go buy our stuff from there because we love you guys, and you'll see a lot of the new products there, and maybe we'll do something exclusive together or something fun like that.
Yeah. Hell yeah. Well, thank y'all for coming on, and thank you for watching, listening, however you're doing this. If you can give us a like, follow, all that good stuff. If you have any questions or you want to tell them how much they suck, leave a comment there below, and they'll probably not read it. But anyways, we do appreciate you watching. Tell your friends, all that good stuff, and see you next time.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Look at that.
We did it.
Only a little bit over.
Yeah, it's not bad. We, it,